What do you say? I wanted to look at a number of aspects of Hilchos Yontif. And I want to begin with the principle of Hoyl. It's a very, very central principle to many, many halachos in Hilchos Yontif. And every time we look at a shaila in Hilchos Yontif, we have to factor in how Hoyl will affect it. Let's begin at the beginning. That's usually the best place to begin. The Gemara Psachim, Mem Vav Amud Beis, cites a machlokes, Oifim Yontif L'Chol. Yontif is a very good time. You're home, you're not working. So what better idea than, listen, cook supper for tomorrow night. Tomorrow you're working, and then tomorrow you'll have probably double the work to do because you took off for Yontif. So, cook on Yontif, you're home, you're allowed to cook. So, cook tomorrow night's dinner on Yontif. So, over me Yontif l'chol. Yontif is a lois asay. So, Chizda says that you like it, you get malchus. It's rather self understood that the license for ochel nefesh does not mean that these malochas are not a maisa malocha. But the Torah wanted us to be able to prepare for Yontif on Yontif. And consequently, the Torah allowed us to cook and do other things on Yontif. For what purpose? Tzarech Yontif, for the purpose of Yontif. If they're not for the purpose of Yontif, then the Torah was not out to let us do them. Why should we be doing them on Yontif? So the Torah did not give license to do these things on Yontif. If there's no license to do this cooking, I bake the cake on Yontif for after Yontif use. So he says, it's Malkus. You violate the Malkom Malach al Yosef. Not allowed to do Malach on Yontif. And that's the straight forward way to look at it. Along comes Rabba. And Rabba says, no. You don't get malchus for it. I mean, it's agreed it's awesome with the Rabbanon to do such a thing, but you don't get malchus for it. Why don't you get malchus for it? Why don't you get malchus for it? So the reason is, what do we mean by ochel nefesh? You can have a lot of definitions of ochel nefesh. We could define ochel nefesh as that which I will definitely use for ochel nefesh, and nothing more than that. It could be a very strict constructionist. So we would say, listen, if there are four people and they all eat chicken, so I can cook four pieces of chicken and that's it. That's one way to look at it. But what would happen if I said, listen, four people, or maybe one or two of them are going to want seconds, so I should make six pieces of chicken. Do I know anyone's going to eat it? No, I can't even tell you. Probably they're going to, but there's a good chance. And I think that the litmus test would be, what happens if I were preparing this meal on Erev Shabbos? How many pieces of chicken would I make? So if I would make, six pieces of chicken, because I want to make sure that I have enough for all the people that are eating, that if someone's still hungry, I'm able to give them something. I don't have to tell them, I'm sorry, if there's nothing more to eat, you know. You know, at the end of the day, it's a house. He's not eating in an institutional setting, you know, he's eating in his home. In your home, you hope that if you're still hungry, they have what to give you. So, if it was a Friday afternoon and I was cooking for Shabbos, I'd make six pieces for these four people. So, if that's the normal way that I would prepare, because it's within the range of what I have to anticipate happening, so then on Yontif, I should be able to do the same thing. This is the normal preparation for this meal. So that's also Oichel Nefesh. It's a normal preparation for this particular meal. So these are clearly Mutta. Rabba has a very, very expansive view of Oichel Nefesh. And Rabba says that as long as it might be used, even however remotely for Ochel Nefesh, it still fits under the aegis of Ochel Nefesh. Could be used for Ochel Nefesh. That's already Midoraisin is a heter of Ochel Nefesh. So why? So how am I going to use it? Everybody ate here. We're not planning to eat this today at all. It's not on the menu for the rest of today. So what's the Ochel Nefesh? So Rabbi says, Olam Ibkloy Orchel. That Orchel may show up. A guest may come unexpectedly. If a guest knocks on the door and says he's hungry, will I give him a piece of chicken? Yeah. So which piece of chicken? The one I cooked for tomorrow night's supper. I'll give him to eat today. So it could come in handy for Yontif. And that's one of my classic stories. That when I lived in Kew Gardens, and I had, you know, very, very, only a small family and very young children. So in that setting, you don't prepare a lot of food for Shabbos. You have yourself, your wife, your little bit you need for the kids. How much, you know, when you have adults, you don't know what's going to happen. Adults can come with an enormous appetite, and you have to be prepared for that. So you have to prepare a lot, expensively. So, you know, chicken, whatever. Shabbos is about to start. It's to, you know, one of those wintry Shabboses where the Shkia is around 4:30. It's 10 minutes till the Shkia, 4:20, and there's a knock on my door. Not expecting anyone. I didn't invite anyone. I'm not expecting anyone to come. I open up the door, and who's standing at the door? A relative of mine is standing at the door. They were en route from London, and they were delayed. And they couldn't make it back to Brooklyn where they lived. So you make a quick cheshbon. Kew Gardens is very convenient for that. It's about the closest Jewish neighborhood to the airport, just about, especially where they knew someone where they could go to. So they didn't have baggage. They just had a handbag. They told the stewardess that their Sabbath is coming. They have to get off. They ran off the plane. They jumped in a taxi. And 10 minutes before Shkia, they knocked on the door, opened up the door. I didn't have what to feed them, but it was 10 minutes till the Shkia. So you throw another piece of chicken into the soup, a little bit more in the cholent, whatever. Now we had what to feed them. You know? Hold on, McCloy Orchem. You can never know when Orchem are going to come. You know, I've told you, I think, I tease the Hasidim, my Hasidish friends. You know, this year, Pesach, the last day is Pesach, of Friday and Shabbos in Chutz La'aretz. So the Hasidim eat Knedloch on Achron Shal Pesach in Chutz La'aretz. So I said to them, tell me something. I said, you're cooking them. You're cooking them on Friday. So you're cooking them with an Erev Tavshilin. So what do you mean, Hola Mekloy Orcha? You guys wouldn't eat this, no matter who comes there. You wouldn't eat it, you know. So I said to you guys, you see, you guys live with the Litvak. Instead, a Litvak might come to my house, you know, and I'll give it to him. I'm a snagged, you know. So you can't hold his mamish also, because you wouldn't be able to give it to them then either. So it can't be too also, you know. You know, wise, a general rule, I only like to give a hard tease people that are like my, that are similar to my background. I don't want anyone to say I'm discriminatory against anybody. I eat gebrokts is purely the Yad Hashem that I eat gebrokts. My father, Allah Mashallah, was a Ben Zkunim by his father. But a far time, my father was old enough to really know what was going on. His father was 60 years old already. So at that point in his life, my Zayda had problems chewing. So he couldn't, he was a Hasidic Yid. And he didn't eat rocks his whole life, but he couldn't chew the matzah anymore. So he went to Rav Moshe Rosen, Zatzal, the Choshev, the Rov in Brownsville, Kidanarov, and he was told, he was matzah neder, that he could eat rocks. So my father was a little boy, they ate rocks in his house. Now, that didn't, you know, necessarily save me. Now, on the other side, my mother, Allah Shalom, and her family, they ate rocks. But in the United States, my Zayda became friendly with Sadeh Gera Chassidim. And so the Guru Hasidim, and he stopped eating gebrokts. So, but he didn't impose it on the family. So my Baba used to cook for the family, and she cooked for him separately. So, as I say, I slipped through on both sides. So, you know, so the people that don't eat gebrokts, they tease them. You know, it's part of my heritage. If you're not from my heritage, I don't bother you. You know, Kitzer. So. It's just very, very interesting how Hoyle plays a role. And that's according to most Rishonim, the Gemara even asked it as a kasha. The Gemara says, According to Rabbah, we understand the mechanism of the Erev Tavshila. Erev Tavshila is clearly a rabbinic invention. There's no posik that told us to such a thing as Erev Tavshila. So how could we take a rabbinic invention and to be Matar and Issa Deraisa? How could that be? Except according to Rabbah, we have the principle of Hoyel, so then it's only awesome with the Rabbonim. If the Rabbonim banned it, the Rabbonim could give me license to do it. Whereas according to Rav Chisda, that you get Malkus, so what's the rationale for the Erev Tavshila? So the Baruch comes on to the fact that he holds that Tzorchei Shabbos Nasen B'Yontif, that you were allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. So I considered one, as though I was Masber at once, it's one block of Kedusha. It has different levels of intensity, so it will go up. The frequency will change, but it's one block of Kedusha. It's like a 48-hour holiday. But it has different parts. The first 24 hours of one, then the second 24. But it's one block of Kedusha. It's one yontif. It's one happening. So that's his shita. Most of the Rishonim and Paskin like Rabbah, there are some, a small number that Paskin like Rav Chisda. Now, there's a very big practical difference between these two views. A very big practical difference. According to Rabbah, there is still one case that despite the fact that he owns a hole where I could violate an Issa D'Raisa by cooking a Yontif L'Chol. And when is that? If I cook at the very end of the day so that the food will not be Erev ready before Shkia, before Yontif ends, if you want to give him Malkus, it would have to be before Yontif ends. But it's an Issa D'Raisa because I don't have hole V'Yim Ekloi Orchem. I don't know, Reach cannot come and eat this on Yontif because it's not ready to be eaten on Yontif. So that clearly I've trashed the halacha and I violate the love. Whereas if you say, so if that's the rationale for the Erev Tavshilin, then the food that I cook on Friday, Erev Shabbos with the Erev Tavshilin, has to be ready to be eaten, at least half cooked, so I could eat it as a cooked food before Shkia Sachama. So if somebody comes, I could actually serve it to him. If I hold Tzorchei Shabbos Nasen B'Yontif, I have no such requirements. I could cook at the last minute. It doesn't have to be edible today. I'm not relying upon the fact that it's useful for today. And as I said, most Rishonim Paskin like Rabbah. So consequently, we have to be very careful, the Mogen Aharon says, with an Erev Tavshilin, to cook early enough in the day that it's edible as a cooked item on Yontif. Otherwise, we're going to run into trouble. The Erev Tavshilin is of no avail. So this is a very important difference between the two principles, between the principle of Hoyel and the principle of Tzorchei Shabbos Nasen B'Yontif.
Is that different on Friday, on Erev Shabbos? When you cook Erev Shabbos?
No. Erev Shabbos, there's no Issa D'Raisa. So there is, if you have a blech, for example, then you could let it cook even if you put it up raw at the Shkia, if you have a blech. If you have a blech, yes,
dust.
No, before Shkia, yeah. And it can cook, the whole thing can cook on Shabbos, it's fine.
Not when it's Erev.
Not if it's Yontif already. The Yontif, it has to be, the blech is of no avail.
Doesn't have to be 50% cooked.
If you don't have a blech. Yes, that's, and like to point out, Rav Henkin Zatzal strongly suggested that the food be 100% cooked before Shkia. Why? Because it's our practice. We tend to move things around on the blech. And if I move something to a warmer spot on the blech, so I'm going to violate Bishul if it's not fully cooked. You know, on those rare occasions when we've had, like I mentioned before, at 4:20 in the afternoon to throw something into the pot, so, you know, we make a very strong declaration that the pot shouldn't be touched until the morning. You know, let's say the cholent, you put extra potatoes or extra piece of meat in. Not to open it, not to touch it, just leave it where it is. So there's no shash of violating bishul for Shabbos.
And the Hasidim were allowed to, on Friday, to cook like a bracha sandwich with the Erev Tavshilin that
they
possibly only allowed to
get
Shabbos?
So that's what I always tease them. I tease the daylights out of them, you know.
But technically, they should be able to eat it Erev Shabbos.
but they can't date at Erev Shabbos. That's, I tease the daylights out of them. I harass them, you know.
I don't want to get into our topic. Just on that note, Erev Shabbos, as long as you have a blech, is that 100% of the to put up a minute before Shabbat?
But a blech, yeah.
Yeah. Even if you're planning to, even if you're planning to eat it that night?
Yes.
That's 100%.
That's one of the reasons you have a blech. But as I say, Rav Henkin strongly advises not to do such things. What? Same thing. You have to cover it, you know, on the plata. I make a blech out of aluminum foil.
The current platas, they make some that have no handles or nothing that you could possibly.
If there's no adjustment, if it's only one heat, then for this purpose, you wouldn't need a blech.
Right.
Yes, that's correct. So this is a very central aspect. Toil is a very central to Hilchas Yontif. There is another halacha in Yontif which is also affected by toil. Very, very interesting. And it really, we've talked about the fact that you can't prepare a Yontif l'choil. Now you also cannot prepare from one day Yontif to the next. The Rambam apparently has a shita that on Rosh Hashanah, because of Yom HaRichta, you can cook from one day Yontif to the next. But we do not paskin like that. The Shulchan Aruch puts Rosh Hashanah in the same category as all the other Yom Tovim, and you cannot cook from one day Yontif to the next. So it's not only from Shabbos to Shabbos, from Yontif L'chol, it's from one day of Yontif to the second day Yontif in Chutz L'Oretz, you also can't do such a thing. So the shaila now arises is the following. Let's say that I got hungry late in the afternoon on Yontif. So I decided, listen, I'll wash again on Yontif. I'll wash, and I'll be in the middle of a suda, so I won't have an Easter necessarily on eating during Ben Hashmoshes. And now I want to cook some food. And I'll eat it during Ben Hashmoshes. I'll put up a cup of tea or something. And I want to cook the bur during Ben Hashmoshes. I want to cook an egg. Well, a child needs to eat, for example. That would be a good example. So I want to make an egg for them for dinner, for supper. They're going to go to sleep soon. They want an egg. So I'll cook an egg for them during Ben Hashmoshes. So the halacha is, Rabbi Akiva Eiger points it out right at the very beginning of Hilchos Yontif on Tov Tzadik Hei, that it's also to do so. Why? Because Ben Hashmoshes has three possibilities. Possibility number one, it's Kula Yom. It's part of today, not part of the nighttime. Possibility number two, it's part of the nighttime tomorrow and not part of today at all. Now, according to both of those possibilities, I would be able to cook during Ben Hashmoshes because I'm cooking for the same day use. But there's a third possibility. And that third possibility is that Ben Hashmoshes is part day and part night. And where does it change? It's some unknown point. Somewhere along the spectrum, but at an unknown point. So if I cooked now and it's ready later, so it could be that I started cooking in the daytime and I ate it at night. And that would be awesome with the rice to do so. So Rabbi Kivayger writes that you cannot cook during Ben Hashmoshes for this reason. I'm Rabbi Kivayger right at the beginning, maybe the first Rabbi Kivayger in Hilchos Yontif, even right at the beginning. So I discussed this halacha with Rabbi Yosef Zatzal. And you're dealing with a person his analysis, his depth with everything was awesome. Was awesome. You know, he had very little appreciation of people that had a lot of bekiyas and no depth. There was once a din Torah that he was responsible for organizing. It had to do with some deal in the world of kashrus within one of the organizations. That had been done on a shayla. So he had to appoint a dayanim for it. So he appointed two dayanim that were of strong, one was of strong personality, had to be there, so he appointed another dayan of equally strong personality to represent the other side, so that they shouldn't, you know, shouldn't get pushed over. And then there's a shayla, he had to select the sholosh, the third dayan. So someone that was close with him said they brought him a list of 60 names of who the Sholosh might be. And until he finally picked one, he decided this one is Roy to be. So one name he came to, they said, you know, he's a big Talmud Chacham. So Rabbi Yoshua said, no, he said, to the people that he was consulting with. He knows a great deal, he says, but does he know how to learn Tosfos in depth? Does he understand Tosfos? That to him, that was the essential. He said he never learned anything superficially in his life. Everything he learned was be'il. He would spend on his father's yard side, so he learned five prokem mishnayos. His father's name was Avram. So he learned five prokem mishnayos, one that started with an aleph, a vayis, a reish, a hey, and a mem. He could start at 2:30 in the morning when he started his limud, and he wasn't yet finished the next night after Tzeisa Kachovim still had a finish. Because he could not learn superficially. He said he never did such a thing in his life. Everything he learned be'ian, and every mesechta he started, he said, I finished. And I went to the next one. So I was discussing this halacha with him. So he made a very, very interesting observation. A very interesting and fascinating observation. And even within that observation, there's a shtickle chiddush to it. But he says to me, it's true, Rabbi Kivayga says you cannot do malocha during Ben Hashmoshes. And he says, but it depends what type of malocha it is. He said, if it's a malocha which takes time to reach the usability, then you can, like cooking an egg. So it takes some time, it takes a minute, it takes 2 minutes. You know? So that's also to do. But something that you could use immediately, he says, let's say you're carrying a sefer. You want to carry a sefer to shul during Ben Hashmoshes. And there's no Eruv. So at any second, you could just whip the sefer out and use it. So it's always usable. He says, then because of Hoyol, there's no problem. At any second, you could use it. So there's never a point that you're really doing from now until tomorrow. At that second, you could be out of some carrying it. I could be using it this second. So Mamela, there's always Hoyol. So he says, when there's Hoyol, he says, there would not be a problem doing a Malocha Ben Hashmoshes. So particularly affects Tzitzot. Tzitzot is really where it's most relevant. I don't know if it has other relevancies, but in Tzitzot it's relevant. So Rabbi Yoshua said, Tzitzot Paskin, that you could do Tzitzot during, in other words, if it's something that you could use at any moment, safer or something of that nature, that you could use at any moment, so then you're allowed to carry it during Ben Hashmoshes. There's no Iser in carrying it.
Carrying a baby?
Carrying a baby. That's, I don't see any problem. There's not a hachona in carrying a baby. It's a tzairah. It's good. That's not the issue. Not a baby needs to be carried. The baby's not a sack of potatoes. A sack of potatoes you have to bring to the place you're going to cook it. A child you carry because you have to carry the child. There's a tzairah. Right? The Shah says you're allowed to carry a child on Yom Tov, right? Because it's a tzairach to carry the child. You're going home and the child, you know, leaving the child in the street. So there's a tzairach to carry the child. That's a different, there's no shaykhas to this. So this is Rabbeisai, is an important principle of hoyil. Then there's another case, and Rabbi Yoshua astounded me, and eventually I found a mocker for his din in the Rav Shulchan Aruch. But he was, blew me away. I asked him the following shiloh. Let's say make it simple. Let's say you want to use hot water. It's a simple case. And by taking out the hot water, so more water is going to go into the boiler to cook. So do you say that the water that cooks is part of the tzorach of taking out the hot water, because I can't take out the hot water now without causing new water to go in. So therefore, the new water is also considered a tzorach. It's a tzorach of my getting the old water out or not. That's the shaila. Right? Since I can't get the hot water out without new cold water going into the boiler, so there's a tzorach for that to go in. Well, it was relevant in other cases. It's a swara that I saw once for at least an Alpers or some. I forgot even what the Shiloh, something with the garbage, with burning the garbage. I don't remember exactly what he used, but this Shiloh. So I asked it to Rabbi Yosef, and he tells me, yeah, it's a Svara, but it's only a Svara in a case where you have Hoyle together with it. If you don't have Hoyle, then you can't use the Svara. So it comes in, it came out that, for example, if it's not the end of the day, so it's still conceivable that the water that came in will get hot and you could still use it, then you're allowed to take hot water out of the faucet. But at the very end of the day, with a new water coming in, you'll never be able to use today, so there's no hector of hoyo. So some guy came, you know, this, and he asks me, oh, it doesn't make any sense what Rabbi Yosef said, because at some point you're going to, you know, how are you going to take out the next water? You tell me hoyo. Well, how are you going to take the next water? A new water will come in. So you're always going to be stuck. You won't be able to take the last water out. It's not shaya choyel. You know, in this world, you have to be blessed with a little bit of humility. You don't think you're going to come with such a baby kasha, and you just step outsmarted the god ladder, you know. But, you know, so I told him there are two answers to your question. Number one, Rav Moshe Zatzal and many others paskin that Tzikresha Ba'akam is mutter. So I can't ask a goy to do a malacha for me, but I can ask him to do something which has a Tzikresha of a malacha. So if I wanted to take hot water out, I could ask a goy to open the hot water faucet. That's the maisa that he's doing. The fact that new water goes in is only a Tzikresha. So Tzikresha Ba'akam is mutter. That's first of all. So I told him that's a very practical answer. If you want a technical answer, I'll give you a technical answer too. And the technical answer is that I could go down to the basement, close the intake valve, and open the drain. And water, I don't need gravity then. Then the gravity will bring the water out, and I can take hot water out of the boiler without any new water coming in at all, if I want. That's a technical answer, if you understand technical things. But the first answer, that Psikresha Bahakam is mutter, is a practical answer. So that's what he told me. And it's based on a whole complicated halacha found in the Rav Shulchan Aruch. If you're allowed to shecht, if the army comes and they're quartered in your house, if you're allowed to shecht animals for them. So there's a whole Rav Shulchan Aruch that if you can take whatever meat you want for yourself, if you're allowed to take some for yourself, then there's a whole head to the shecht. So it's built on hoyo. And it's built that I won't be able to get my part without giving them their part. Whatever. So both of the Sfaras are the Rav Shulchan Aruch there. The army, yeah, they used to force you to quarter soldiers that were non-Jews, yeah. Billeting. So then the question is, can I have to prepare, let's say, shecht an animal. But I could also take food. I could take this animal. I could take any animal that I want for myself. But unless I provide them, I won't be able to shecht for myself. So
they made an issue, though. They said, don't invite goyim for your donkey meal. You can have goy come for Shabbos, but don't invite them for because you may come to cook.
Yes, exactly. It's not relevant here. Nobody asked them. The government just put them in my house. Whatever. I don't know if it's Pekuach Nefesh. I wouldn't say that. But the government put them up. It's not a question. I didn't invite them. The halacha of Ein Mazminim Akum means I can't take social responsibility. I don't have social responsibility for these guys. You know, I have authoritarians placing a responsibility on me, but not social responsibility. So this is another use of hoyel. It's an unarticulated, I shouldn't say, it's not a principle, it's articulated in the Torah itself. And it's a tremendous chiddush. A tremendous chiddush. I mean, if you asked me, I would have paskin like Rav Chisda, all the way. I would have said that he's right. I would have paskin like him. But Chachmei Ashas had a different view. Chachmei Rishayim.
Banish Moshe, you like to take hot water from?
No.
You're not.
Because the new hot water is not going to be ready yet. So right instantly. You're not allowed. Correct. Even a little before, because it can take more time for the water to boil up. Or to take water out. So
can't wash your hands and face in warm water.
Close to the end, close to the, you know, in the last hour, hour and a half or so, I would say before Shkia, you shouldn't really be using the hot water on Yom Tov.
Once Yom Sheni of Yom Tov comes in, you're okay.
Yeah, then you could put it on again. So these are just a number of examples of the principle of Hoyle. A very, as I said, chiddushtika principle. And I don't begin to understand all of it. You know, there are certain sugyas in Shas, which I believe Chazal wrote to teach us not to be balagaiva. You know, it's whenever you get full of yourself and you think you know how to learn, so you're supposed to open up some sugyas in Shas. And that'll remind us that we have no shaykhs with understanding what Chazal wanted, you know. So one of my favorite ones is Dav Gimel Amud Aleph and Zvochem. This is the Karen Ira writes there that he has no idea what how Gemara is putting different things together. What in the world they have to do with each other? It's beyond him. You know, it's one of my favorite places for this, for humility. The Sugya Memvav Amud Beis and Psochem is also like that, because then the Gemara lists all types of other hoyles besides this hoyle, which seems to have nothing conceptually to do with this hoyle. And in other applications, and what this is supposed to have to do with hoyle escapes me. Whatever. But there, I said, there are certain sugyish shas. I think Chazal wrote just, you know, whenever we get too full of ourselves, they're telling her, go learn that daf. When you figure it out, then claim that you know something. You know, until then, sit quietly.
When it's done Friday, there's no potential problem of using hot water right before.
No. What's your problem?
I mean, the fact that you're sitting is not.
You're allowed to, melochas, we paskin like Bes Hillel, that you're allowed to have melocha take place on Shabbos. And you can set it in motion. You can't do melocha.
I mean, the problem with like Bishol and stuff and Shehi, I mean, that's because you're using that food. I mean, that's the issue there is not the
malachas,
then it's
the
food.
It's exer derabbanon. We were afraid that I'll come to fool around with the fire to move things along so that I'll be able to eat. There's no malacha that's involved there. So these are just a number of examples of hoyle. It's a very, very important principle in Hilchos Yom Tov. And it has many, many manifestations. But sof kol sof, even after hoyle, there is an isa derabbanon. Let's not forget that. In other words, I can't say hoyle, so since they have hoyle, I'm going to cook for tomorrow. That I can't do. It's agreed that it's also midrabbanon, and as expressed in Shas, in the beginning of the second parak of Beyo, that Chazal created the Erev Tavshilin so that we should draw a lesson from it. And that is, if I want to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, I cannot do so unless I have a special license called Erev Tavshilin. So then if I get in into my head, I want to cook from Yom Tov to the Chol, I say, I can't even cook for Shabbos without a special heter. So how in the world can I cook Yom Tov L'chol? So it was meant to reinforce that notion that I shouldn't cook Yom Tov L'chol. That's what it was meant to do. But so we don't rely on the principle of hoyle to allow me to cook for after Yom Tov. It's hoyle, so there's no problem. Yeah, there's no problem with the rice, but the Rabbanon did not want us to be spending Yom Tov in that fashion. So that's one thing I wanted to look at. I wanted to look a little bit at the principle of Hoyle today and a number of its applications. And as I say, I find it a very fascinating, very fascinating subject. Now, I wanted to look at one other Yom Tov inyan tonight's share. Generally speaking, the things that are mutar on Yom Tov, we would define as Haitzah, carrying is mutar on Yom Tov. And those things would have to do with cooking and bishul, including havor, the use of fire. That's what's mutar on Yom Tov. So the halacha states that I can use fire for cooking. I can't create a new fire. That I can't do. But I can use fire for cooking.
Why can't I create a new fire?
We'll come to that. We're going to come there soon. We'll get there soon. Well, we can't create a new one. But I can add fuel to an existing fire, and I can cook. So, now, if I can add fuel to an existing fire, so that's itself is havara. That's mamash the malocha of havara, the savara ish. So if I can add fuel to a new fire, so why is it that I can't light a new fire? Right? It can't be Moilereish on Yom Tov. What's the reason for that? But there are about three or four different shitas on what it is. I'm going to lock in on one. And so there are some, I think, that want to say that it could have been done with a yom, you can't do it, it's a noila. There's all types of different sforos. But bottom line of all the sforos, overwhelmingly, except there's one sheet that wants to claim that it's a deraisa. But other than that, rove of the Rishonim learn that it's isam of the Rabbonim. It's not a deraisa, the kiddin, being moilereish. Some say moilereish, I think it's a din noila, you're making a new thing. There are varied, as I said, explanations, but almost all of them come out to be that it's awesome with the Rabbanan, it's not awesome with the Raisa. Now, this is a very, very important point. In understanding the halacha, halacha l'maisa, it's one of the very difficult tasks to know what's the Raisa and what's the Rabbanan. Now, you might ask, listen, at the end of the day, who cares what's the Raisa and what's the Rabbanan? They're both usr. So Mali, if it's a deraisa, you know, nowadays we don't give malchus nowadays. You know, if you gave malchus, so, you know, like take this guy in and smack him up. So we have to know he violated the law. But since we're not in the malchus business nowadays, so maich patlonu, what's deraisa, what's derabbanan? It's usr. So the same halacha that says this is usr, says that's usr. So what's the difference between them? What do we care? There are two different reasons to care. There's what I would call a philosophical reason and a practical reason. There's a philosophical reason that it's, according to the Rambam, if I claim that something which is also with the Rabbanan is also with the Raisa, I'm either about Toysef. So that's a philosophical reason. In other words, I'm adding to the Isurim. We don't have a right to add Isurim to the Isurim in the Torah. If we clearly delineate the fact that this is also with the Rabbanon, that the Rabbanon disallowed it, it's not a deraisa dikadin, so then I can, it's fine. You know, because we have a principle of a sus yog l'tayra, right? The very first Mishnah, right? In Masechta Avos. And the Vilna Gaon cites what's the source for it. There's really a Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Noso. And the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Noso says the following, that a Nozer is supposed, what is a Nozer not supposed to do? He's not supposed to drink wine. Yayin v'sheichor al teish. Sheichor, and that is not beer, it's old wine, aged wine. Yet, what did the Torah write in that Parsha? It's not only wine that he can't eat, mechatzanim v'adzog lo yisoichor. He cannot eat the peels of a grape, he cannot eat the grape seeds. So what's the pshat? You know, the Nezirus is focused on Yayin, it's true. As Chazal tell us, Loma Nismecha, Parshas Nozer, Parshas Saita, Shakolaroya Saita, Bukukula, Yazaratz, Woman Ayayin. Wine is a very double edged sword, as Adam Arishan learned. Chazal say that Adam Arishan, according to one view, in Chazal, the Eitz Hadas was a grape, was wine. And Adam Arishan jumped the gun. He imbibed it on Erev Shabbos. If he had waited till Friday night and he'd give Shevach Vaido ala Kiddush to the Rabbeinu Shalom, he would have been allowed to use it. But he wasn't supposed to use it, at least initially, not for a mundane purpose. For a sanctified purpose, he was allowed to use it. So, Yayin, on one hand, if he'd used it, it would have been the right time, it would have been a Kiddush Shem Shemayim. Because he used it at the wrong time, it brings destruction to the world. And that's wine. Wine and alcohol are double-edged. On one hand, Chazal tell us, Yayin Yisamach Levavenosh. Wine, Yayin Yisamach. Wine brings joy to people, right? And Sheikha Lemorei Nefesh, if someone is down, you know, give them a little something to drink to cheer them up. And that is a very, that's a very healthy use if done in proper moderation, and no one doesn't make a habit of it. And on the other hand, if one goes overboard and it gets out of balance, hand, one could do all type of destructive things because he loses, his seichel loses control, he loses motor control, his seichel is not functioning, and he can do all types of things that are terrible. So, kolaroya seitu b'kukula yazer atzmo min ayayin. So, the Torah was concerned he shouldn't drink. That's true. But what did the Torah ban? Bechatzana ba'zag l'seichel. Grape seed oil, he can't use. He can't use a grape jelly made from a grape peel. He's not getting drunk on that. Try as he might, he's not going to get drunk. No way he can get drunk. So the Torah itself made the geder. The Torah said, if you're supposed to stay away from wine, you know the best thing to do? Don't touch the grape altogether. More than that, if you see the vineyard, take a little the long way around. Don't go through the vineyard. Right? Schar, schar, go around and around. The karmel is sikro. Don't get near the kerem, the vineyard. So that's where the Torah itself, in that parsha, wrote the Asus Yog the Torah. So the Goyin says that's what we have a notion. The Goyin says an ovus of Asus Yog the Torah. So that's one reason we have to know what's also with the Raisa and what's also with the Rabbanah. But that's a philosophical reason. It's one that's rooted in the halacha. It's not just an abstract philosophical notion. But there's another reason, there's a very practical reason that I have to know. And that is, the halacha very clearly differentiates between the types of actions that I can ask a non-Jew to do under varied circumstances. So as we know, I don't like pikuach nefesh, we could do anything. So let's not talk about pikuach nefesh. If it's non-pikuach nefesh and someone is ill, so I can ask a non-Jew to do every malacha deraisa that there is in the book, without exception, any at all. For someone that's regularly ill, not dangerously ill, he's ill. I can ask a non-Jew to do every malach in the book for him. So despite the fact that I cannot carry medicine in the street where there's no air of on yontif, but I can go to the pharmacy and ask them to have a non-Jew deliver it to the house of a chayla. And it's 100% mutter, because a non-Jew is allowed to do malacha for a chayla shein by sakar. Now, there are times that we allow a non-Jew to do an Issa D'Rabbanan under certain limited circumstances. One of them is Ledvar Mitzvah, if there's a Dvar Mitzvah involved, right? Or a Tzarech Godel, a very significant need. Or someone that has a minor illness. He's not, we can call him a Chaylish, Ein Bo Sakona, even he's uncomfortable. He's uncomfortable. So I could ask a non-Jew, you know, he needs an aspirin. He has not a grand headache, but he's uncomfortable. His back bothers him a little bit, not terribly. So I could ask a non-Jew to bring up an extra blanket for him, an extra pillow to make him more comfortable. Even though in a place where there's no Erev, there's no Issa D'Raisa, but there's no Erev. So that's mutter. So therefore, we have to know what's also with the rice and what's also with the rabbanon. Because if I want to ask a non-Jew to do it, that's a litzarach mitzvah, right? There is one shita quoted in the Ramor, Balayita shita, based on a Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara is very clipped, that Gemara in Erevin. It doesn't spell out all the details. There was some case that somebody did something, and the Shaila is why they did it. And the Rishonim have a lot of different explanations. One explanation was it was a mitzvah deraisa, and it had to do for a dvar mitzvah, and it was mutter to ask a non-Jew to do it. And that's the way the Bala Yitro learns Pshat on the Gemara. So from his standpoint, any time there's a dvar mitzvah, I can ask a non-Jew to do an Iser deraisa. And the Ramon Shulchan Aruch quotes this. The Chofetz Chaim notes on the spot that the Arizal and many others said that we should not follow this view and we shouldn't do it, and it's been relegated in the world of halacha l'tzorchei ravim, what's a communal necessity, like to fix the eruv or something like that. But other than that, we don't ask a non-Jew to do a halacha d'raisa, even for a dvar mitzvah. So now, let's look at the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Shabbos, the fire went out on the stove. So, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, the food is still hot, so I can go and I can run upstairs and knock on my neighbor's door and put my food on his blech. It won't be very convenient, very inconvenient to do so. You know, I'd really not like to do it, but what can I do? I want to have a cholent tomorrow. The cholent went out, so according to Rav Moshe, it's hot and it's cooked. I could put it on to another blech. Could I ask him to relight the fire? Even if we'll consider it a tzairach, because in other words, the need to go to a neighbor is enough to make it into a tzairach, that I should be able to be independent, but it's a malacha d'oraisa. How could I ask him to do it? Okay, that's Shabbos. Now let's go to Yom Tov. The fire blew out on the stove. I want to cook. Could I ask a non-Jew, right? I don't have food for Yom Tov, but I need it for Yom Tov, the fire. So it's tzorach, it's a real tzorach Yom Tov, it's a significant tzorach, perhaps even a dvar mitzvah too, if I really, I don't have much else, you know. It's a main part of the meal I have to make still. Could I ask a non-Jew to light the fire for me? It's dark in this room. I would like to learn. It's a dvar mitzvah. But, you know, I don't have a convenient place, whatever reason, the Shabbos clock worked in properly and the lights went out in the living room. You know, the rest of the house does not have really, you know, adequate lights to sit and learn. I don't have a place, I don't have a chair, I don't have a table, whatever. So I'd like to co-ask the guy to come and to put on the lights so I could learn. So it depends. If we'll say that you can't be moilidacious of the rice of the kadin, as I said, there's one sheet that it holds, then I can't ask a guy to do it any more than I can ask him to do it on Shabbos. But since Rov sheet is hold, clearly, I think there's only one sheet that it holds as a deraisa. There's at least four that hold its midrabbanon. So according to that, so it's only a question of an isa derabbanon. So I can ask them to put on the lights so I can learn. Because it's a shvus to shvus, b'mokom mitzvah. So it's important to know what's a deraisa and what's a derabbanon. So moilid eish on yontub is a derabbanon. It's not a deraisa dikadin.
Would a Jew be able to be motivated
to banish Moses? It's a good question.
Because it's a
Darabon? It's a good question. Lidvar mitzvah, maybe. I have to think about it. You know, you have to see whatever, what will matter, right? It will not matter everything. We'll matter Amir la'akum ben Ashmoshes, but I don't know if we'll matter Shvus Bias to die in ben Ashmoshes. That I don't know.
The guy can't turn on the gas to light him to heat something up on
Yom Tov. Why not? If you really need it for Yom Tov, why not? Yeah, why not?
Your case was where
it went out. No, it doesn't make a difference. No, that's not material.
You don't have to say anything.
No, not Yom Tov. Yom Tov, you don't need to do these tricks. You know, assuming, again, this is either a dvar mitzvah or a significant need. So it's important to know, it's, you know, the differences, the distinctions. What's the raisa, what's the rabbanon?
How about to turn in water? Let's say he lit it for you, but afterwards, can the guy turn it off for you afterwards?
For what reason? You know, well, you have to have a good reason. You don't think it's a sakana to leave it on for the whole Shabbos. Why is it a sakana to leave it on for the whole Yom Tov, you know?
Because for comfort, if it's very hot.
That's something else, so that's good. So that would be a tzorach godel if it's very hot, yeah. It's a little bit b'machleik shnuya. which is mokum to be makel here for an outside reason that I can't go into. Because there is a ran. The ran says anything which is a melacha shein etzricha legufa, you can't use shvus to shvus for. Well, according to the ran, that's why you can't use the shayla. The Gemara says in Shabbos that if there's a fire, lo aleinu, so you can say an indirect way, but you can't ask a guy directly to put it out. So the shayla is why. So there are two types of answers the Rishonim give. One answer is we're afraid that if you directly tell them that you come to do it yourself, you're getting involved in the process of the Baal HaMamono. The Ran says it's not for that reason. The Ran says that since it's a Melocha Shein Etzricha Legufa, the principles of Shus to Shus don't apply. So how that applies to our Kibbutz, with the types of things that we're doing, you know, with electricity, is a very complicated subject. But our Kaponim, you're not Mechuyev to be Choshish for the Ran's Chumrah. By in such a case.
Yeah, but in that case, obviously he's not talking about Knackbush. It's just when it's going to be a big hefset or something.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be a big hefset.
But he had a fire and nothing,
it's
only
the Rabbanah. Oh, so only in most cases, only with the Rabbanah on Shabbos, too. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we've looked a little bit at Hilchos Yontif. Maybe next week, maybe we'll take another look. We'll see. Okay.
Is there a group meeting? Why really?